Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Times by Led Zeppelin. Rockstar, whatever the term means to you, chances are it owes a debt to Led Zeppelin. No one before or since has lived the dream quite like Jimmy Page, Robert Plant, John Paul Jones and John Bonham. In Led Zeppelin, Bob Spitz takes the full measure, separating the myth from the reality with his trademark connoisseurship and flair. It says here, delighted to be joining me live on the line. And we were both bopping along to that whilst we were waiting. Bob Spitz, Bob's good afternoon for us. Good morning to you. Whereabouts are you?
I'm in New York City, so way across the pond.
Way across the pond. There has never been before or since been a band like Led Zepp, both in terms of the musicianship, what they did, and also the lifestyle. If you were writing the blueprint for rock and roll behavior, rock and roll stadium rock, then the Zepp is there.
They changed everything. Yeah, absolutely. They really, you know, put a period at the end of the 1960s, and they drove us headfirst into the 1970s. Everything changed. The sound of rock and roll changed. The way we went to concerts changed. What we expected from our rock stars changed. they did it all. And it all came from, you know, this idea that Jimmy had in his head. He had this new sound in his head. He put this band together. And here we have it. 50 years later, they're still going strong.
I mean, people, I mean, this, you know, there had been the British blues explosion with, you know, the Stones, etc., you know, finding American blues music and bringing it back and then reselling it to the American audience who thought it was brilliant. But Zeppelin took it further and put a twist on it, which was we weren't really expecting, were we?
No, you know, I think that if they would have just regurgitated the American blues, they wouldn't have found an audience here. They had to find some way that it attracted a completely new generation of listeners. And it's really interesting because, you know, in the 1960s, the bands like, you know, the Beatles, Crosby, Stills and Nash, James Taylor, they were romantics and they were post-war bands that came out of World War II. Led Zeppelin was also a post-war band, the Vietnam post-war band. And so all that aggression is what we hear in the music, and it was fantastic.
And also there's that sort of West Midlands, and we're talking the UK, that West Midlands, because I was reading Ozzy's book, and he remembers bumping into Robert Plant in Birmingham in the West Midlands where that black country sank him. And then you have the sort of the London, the more, if you like, the more craft, the more poetic end to. So how do these two worlds meet?
Well, yes. It was the North-South divide. They were the living example of it. They met in a little dingy basement rehearsal hall in London. The two guys from the Midlands, Robert and Bonzo, walked in. They'd never met John Paul before. The band was already formed, but they had never met. And Jimmy put them together kind of like the way you put the Monkees together, you know, one from column A and one from column B. And Robert and Bonzo brought this incredible Midlands sound. I mean, it was thumping. It was hard and it was driving. And they fused it with, you know, Jimmy and John Paul's kind of refined studio sound. They were studio musicians up until this point.
I was going to come to that point because Jimmy had played with basically everybody from the early 60s, hadn't he? He was playing guitar with a whole load of as a session musician with a whole load of established artists you wouldn't think.
Right, and John Paul too. I mean, these were both guys who played three sessions a day. So they'd walk into a studio not knowing who was going to be there. And lo and behold, sometimes it was The Who and The Kinks. Sometimes it was Donovan. Sometimes it was Tom Jones. And those two guys even played on Shirley Bassey's recording of Goldfinger. I mean, they could do anything. So, here we have these two guys from London meeting these two guys from the Midlands, and it was just an explosion. It happened right there. The moment they met in that little dingy rehearsal hall, it happened, and that was it. They were off and running.
And I mean, it really was from the first album onwards. You mentioned that they're the band that take the 60s into the 70s. I mean, the albums come out right at the tail end, but it sort of proceeds because whilst others were getting all psychedelic and Have You Seen the Flower Children or whatever, this and Bonzo's drumming is from another level. It really sort of dragged, and a lot of people say, well, this is the birth of heavy rock. Now there's a big debate about that, but it proceeds a sort of a sobering up from the 60s ideal.
It did. I mean, you know, look, it came right after Altamont. Boom, we get Led Zeppelin. And, you know, I think it was just kind of it just kind of took it to the next degree. I mean, it was incredible. Bonzo, Bonzo was a force unto himself. You listen to those drums, you don't know what this guy's doing. I had to go find Carmine Appice, who was the drummer from Vanilla Fudge, to sit with me, listen to what Bonzo was doing, and explain it to me, because I never heard a guy play triplets with his feet before. This guy was so controlled. And if you ask me, because I'm a musician, who the best musician in Led Zeppelin is, people are so quick to jump on Jimmy or John Paul. But I think that the sound of Led Zeppelin is Bonzo's drums. I mean, it was just incredible.
And the albums come out basically in a, those sort of the four classics come out in an incredibly short period of time. Led Zeppelin 1, Led Zeppelin 2, literally within a 10-month period, or was it even shorter than that? Correct me if I'm wrong here.
Yeah, no, it was 10-month period. And then we have four albums within a year and a half, you know. I mean, just remarkable. These guys had, it was almost like when Dylan first emerged. They had so much churning inside of them that they needed to get out, that they just recorded one album after the next. And of course, they did a lot of that recording on the road, on the fly, because they were playing as well. So that's when people ask me, you know, what it's like for a rock and roller, how do they live these crazy lives? They're performing, they're traveling, they're recording, they're writing. It's all happening at once. It's just one big explosion.
And of course, they were playing, you know, the momentum came with them. How important was the management, by the way, for, behind all this?
The management was very important. I mean, you know, you have to look at it in two ways. Peter Grant, their manager, was a notorious thug. I mean, he was. You know, this is a guy who grew up with the Cray brothers in London, and he had been a wrestler, a professional wrestler, and was a notorious villain. I mean, he'd beat the crap out of somebody. That said, he also was a manager who had seen what happened to people like Chuck Berry and Little Richard and Gene Vincent, guys that he had road managed before, who never got paid. And he made sure that Led Zeppelin was not going to be that way. They got paid their fair share, and he never robbed them. He gave them their fair share. He took very little and was with them on every single concert. He was right by their side. So management was important.
I mean, we talk about the British blues explosion and then taking it back to the States. I mean, Zeppelin absolutely stormed the States like you couldn't believe. They wrote the rule book in stadium rock that still goes today, and with, you know, with the buses and the private planes, etc. You know, I always say that at this period, we were making it up as we went along. There was no, you know, predecessor of this, really. So the behavior and the excesses were just, you know, they were incredibly young guys at the top of their game, surrounded by all the temptations that even Hieronymus Bosch couldn't have thought of.
Exactly right. I mean, when these four guys got off the plane in Los Angeles, they couldn't believe their eyes. It was like, it was like every temptation had been laid at their feet. Gorgeous girls, the beautiful weather, cars that were high polished like a surfboard, that, you know, it just hit them and they went wild. These were guys who grew up in post-war England, and, you know, they were used to rationing when they were kids. They didn't have much money. Kids in those days in the UK had no disposable income to speak of. And here they do. They step off this plane, these poor deprived guys in LA, and they've got tons of money, and there everything is right in front of them. And they went wild. They really did. As you said, Jules, they wrote the book for not only stadiums, but bad behavior as well.
Wasn't it the one of the hotels was called the Riot House because of the antics?
Yes, the Hyatt House, where I actually stayed with Bruce Springsteen when we first went out to L.A. They changed the name of it to the Riot House, and it was because of Led Zeppelin. I mean, if you walked into the Riot House in those days, the entire reception hall down below would be loaded with young teenage girls. And from the upper stories on the 9th and the 10th floor where they stayed, bottles of champagne and furniture would come flying out of the windows. So it was a crazy place to be in those days.
I mean, every other quote unquote bad boy rappers tried to do the same thing. But I mean, the other thing was they were still producing the goods. It's all very well to pretend that you're a bad boy if you can't put a tune together, but they're still touring. They're still filling stadia and they're still putting albums out. And just a quick one as well. No singles. This was very new.
Absolutely right. Jimmy put his foot down very early. No singles. They were going to be an album band. And of course, the record company thought they were crazy. I mean, the record company was, you know, they were beside themselves because they made a lot of money selling singles. And Peter Grant, the manager, said, you're going to, if those kids know that there's new Led Zeppelin product out and they can't get it on a single, they're going to buy the album. They're going to spend, you know, five times as much on an album than they would for a single. And he was absolutely right. That's what they did.
And you know, the big stadium, because again, I mean, people talk about Shea, you know, for the Beatles. But apart from that, nobody had ever done these big venues, had the whole experience packaged so well and put together so well, and with such a dedicated road crew as well, who stayed with them for years as well.
Yeah, listen, when the Beatles played Shea Stadium, and this was just a few years before, they dragged their tiny little Vox amps out there with them. I mean, really, there was no sound to speak of. You couldn't hear the band. By the time Led Zeppelin gets to the stadiums, they've got Marshall stacks, and they don't crank it up to 10. They crank it up to 14, so that you sat there and not only saw them perform and heard them perform, but that sound surged through your whole body. So that was part of the whole new experience that kids never ever experienced before. And it was a revelation.
And how much do you think that, you know, the Led Zeppelin experience sort of mirrors the 70s experience? Because obviously when punk comes along in 75, 76, you know, the Zeppelins are seen as dinosaurs, even though they're just a couple of years older than the Pistols and the Clash.
Look, every next generation does it their own way. I mean, you know, I'm sure that when I became a Beatles and Stones fan in the early 60s, my parents were like, you know, beside themselves. What is this kid doing? And I remember feeling in the 1970s when I heard punk, like, this stuff is crazy. You know, I don't get it. But that's what rock and roll is all about. It's got to be about something different, something new, something dangerous. Rock and roll has to be dangerous. And punk did it. They exploded the next phase of music. It was great. And I think Zepp appreciated it, too. They went to see The Damned very early in the UK. And when they walked into those theaters, those punk guys, they gave Robert and Jimmy, I mean, they made fun of them. They called them dinosaurs. They said, oh, it's Billy Joel. Oh, no, a lounge act. Here they are, Led Zeppelin. It was great.
Yeah, I mean, but one of the things is they don't deviate from the path. They keep doing what they do. You know, because, again, they didn't try and do a punk album. And, no. And the other thing is, in the mid-70s, sees FM radio come on, an AOR, adult-orientated rock. And suddenly, we have the REO Speedwagons, we have the Totos, we have those bands who are playing radio-friendly rock. And at no point does Zeppelin say, you know what, I think we'll do, you know, an album, or we'll put a single out just to sort of capture those listeners. They still kept the faith, as it were.
Yeah, they stayed true to their sound and didn't capitulate. But the really interesting thing about the way radio affected Led Zeppelin is that when they emerged in 1968 and 1969, there was no FM radio was just starting in the United States. And this really brought in a whole new audience of people. You could put a Led Zeppelin album on the air and kids never heard of this group before on a Thursday. And by Saturday, they were standing in line waiting to see Led Zeppelin. In fact, that's the way my book opens up. Zepp was shocked, but radio sold that group.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing is the fact that they didn't do, you know, the radio, you know, they didn't do the Hello magazine, Welcome to My Lovely House. They kept the mystique. You know, Robert goes to Wales, personal tragedy. Jimmy gets very interesting, shall we say, at this point. And, you know, they didn't do a lot of interviews and they weren't exactly sort of media friendly, could you say?
Yeah. Oh, that's an understatement, really. They didn't like the press. They suspected them. And yet at the same time, they craved press. They could never understand how the Stones got more press than they did when the Stones were selling 1/10 of the albums that Led Zeppelin were selling. It really irked Jimmy and Robert. But, you know, they pushed the press away. They treated them badly. When the press was on tour with them, they treated them like servants and they walled themselves off. And so they paid the price for that in the long run.
coming up to the end of the 70s, the ones that I remember was the Nebworth concert back in the UK. That was a huge affair, and people could hear it, you know, basically in the next
on
country.
The moon on yeah, the moon they
exactly
could hear it.
Exactly yeah. You know, and that sort of marks, because obviously the next year we have the tragedy, but they had really reached that level, hadn't they? Forget the varieties of the vagaries of fashion. As I always say, rock fans are the most dedicated fans in the world, and Zep fans, I mean, are absolutely legends.
Yeah, Nebworth was actually a real test for them, because they had been off the road for about 2 years and their fans hadn't seen them. And so this was a chance for them to come back, but come back in a big way. And, you know, there were 150,000 people sitting out in that field for Nebworth. And it was really, you know, the reemergence of Zep. But at the same time, it was one of the last times they ever played in the UK.
I mean, I've read Carmen Appice's book about, you know, his life, you know, and he says how shocked, because he was walking through an airport and saw it on the front page of a newspaper, Bonham's death. I mean, they couldn't have carried on, could they, really, with a secondary drum? I mean, that wouldn't really have worked. I mean, how, you know, because of he was the driving, the pile driver.
Absolutely right. No, look, and, you know, he was Robert's boyhood mate. Robert had known him for a long time. Also, you know, Robert was at the end of his rope with Led Zeppelin. Jimmy's heroin addiction had really driven Robert away. Robert had lost his son while he was on the road. He had been in a terrible car accident, and I think he had just sung that damn song one too many times, and he really wanted to be finished with it. The minute Bonzo died, his mate dying on top of all this, they just cut it off, and that was the end of it. Now Robert can't even get the words Jimmy Page out of his mouth. So I think he's really, really called it quits.
When you come to do an appraisal of Zeppelin, I mean, where do you start? Because people have, you know, the fish in the groupie story, and you know, the jet and all that sort of stuff. How do you cut through? Because the music still stands. I mean, I had this stuff on cassette, for goodness sake, and it still sounds wonderfully fresh. When the Levee Breaks is just a masterstroke of drumming. So how do you separate, you know, how do you cut through the peripherals and get to the heart of what Zeppelin was?
Well, it's as you've said it. You drop the needle on that very first record, and you go through all of them. It's all right there. I mean, it's the music. Here we are 50 years later this week of Stairway to Heaven and the LZ4 coming out, and we're still talking about this band because the music will live on forever. Those guys left us with an amazing catalog of songs, the same way the Beatles and the Stones and the Who have, and it's a driving force. It'll never stop.
And it's good. I mean, and, you know, Robert's out there. I mean, I caught him in concert a couple of years ago with the Shapeshifters. Absolutely brilliant. And he's doing stuff with Alison Krauss. So he's doing the stuff that he wants to do. And perhaps that is better than them being shoehorned together to do yet another reunion and to play, quote unquote, that song again.
Yeah, I think so. Jimmy is committed to, you know, he's driving the Led Zeppelin brand out there. He's doing more remastering. Robert's cut it off, and, you know, life goes on.
So when people look back in 100 years time and they read your excellent book, Bob, what do you think, you know, the legacy is? It, you know, are they the guys who wrote the rule book and took the blues music in a way that really did cut a path for other bands who followed?
I think they did. And not only that, we've got the music, but we've got their story too. And that's why I wanted to get it all in a book. It's the whole story. I mean, it's the story of the 70s, and it's really the story of our lives. They changed the culture. They gave us a new sound. They gave us a new way to be in public. And I think that's what will live on, you know, another 50 years.
The book is called Led Zeppelin, the biography. It's by Bob Spitz, who we've been talking to today. Bob, if people want to find you online, on the socials, do you have a website? Do you do the social media thing?
Yep, I'm on Twitter. And of course, they can go to my website, bobspitz.com. They can even get a personalized autographed copy of the book there.
Worth the entrance price alone. This book is called Led Zeppelin. It's by Bob Spitz, who we'll be speaking to today. Bob, thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure, John. Nice to be here with you.
This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints, Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.